Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, State Player, back with you here on 720 WGN. So legendary comedian Don Rickles left us in 2017. He was America's king of the insult, aimed at audiences in general and celebrities in particular. I had seen Don perform live nearly 24 times and interviewed him backstage in Vegas a year before his passing. Now, for about 5 years, we always went backstage after a show to share some stories, have a few drinks with Don, his wife Barbara, his manager Tony O. And when we were ready to leave, in those last few years, he said, "Do me a favor, keep my name alive." And he said it to everybody he knew. And as big as he was, he wanted people to remember him. It's a big reason I do this every single year around Don's birthday. So, "keep my name alive" was a familiar phrase to many of Don's friends. Here's a quick clip of Jimmy Kimmel talking about that very same request.
"He gave me advice, and good advice, not the advice people give you just to hear themselves giving you advice. He would always say, 'keep my name alive.'" Which he'd tell me to keep his name alive, which I thought was funny because, you know, I was like, "You're Don Rickles. You keep my name alive."
Right. So Don's manager, Tony O, who was also Sinatra's manager, and I became good friends with him over the years. And I had asked him about the time he first met Don Rickles.
"I met Don in Lake Tahoe when I was still a performer. 1980, we were both working at Harris. He was, as he used to say, he was in the big room, mm-hmm. with just a sledge. And I was working at a mini showroom called State Line Cabaret. And that's when we first met. And I started working with him officially, helped got him on the show when the Desert Inn did a big thing for Sinatra on his 77th birthday. And so Don was on that show, and that kind of worked out. I was working with Elliot, as you remember, Elliot Wiseman.
Oh, yeah.
In those days. And so officially, the relationship business-wise kind of started with Don in 1993, 94, so it was around there. As a matter of fact, the last time both Frank and Don were in Chicago together was to open the United Center in, October of 94, I think it was, something like that.
Wow. Wow, and to be witness to all that must have been absolutely incredible. And you've got a great story I want you to share, because you've told it to me before, about Frank and Don having dinner in the Pump Room in Chicago.
Yeah, it was a funny night. It was like the Last Supper, which was normal, you know, for Frank. Every night was like New Year's Eve. And we were sitting at this long table, people on both sides. We were about 12 or 14 people. And kibitzing, talking back and forth. And Frank had ordered a minute steak, believe it or not. I mean, he could afford anything he wanted, but he liked minute steak.
Okay.
And they brought it with a little small bunch of French fries. And the waiter brought a brand new bottle of ketchup over to the table. And Frank opened it, and he was trying to get the ketchup to come out. Never thought of sticking the knife in there to loosen it up. And he's banging on the bottom of the bottle, trying to get the ketchup to come out. And finally, out of sheer frustration, and I think also to try to get a laugh, he threw it over his shoulder, because we were sitting against the wall. He threw it over his shoulder and hit the wall and went down on the floor. And everyone's looking like, "Oh, Jesus, he's in a bad mood or what?" And typical Rickles. Rickles looked across the table and said, "Frank, would you pass the ketchup?"
He's the only guy that could get away with that, you know, over the years.
He got away with a lot of stuff.
He did, but always with Frank, you know? Always got away with it, whether he was on television, on stage.
They pushed each other's buttons. Frank used to like to do things to Don to make him nervous, because Don never knew whether Frank was teasing or not.
Don's manager, Tony Opodisano. Tony will join me live in June when his new book through publisher Simon & Schuster comes out about Sinatra, called Sinatra and Me. All right, my interview with legendary Don Rickles after the news next on 720 WGN. All right, if I had to name my favorite comedian of all time, there would only be one name, and that would be the legendary Don Rickles. I've seen Don perform live over 12.5 times, from Chicago to Vegas, Atlantic City to Los Angeles, and even Milwaukee. And I got to know Don over the last 8 years of his life and got the invitation of a lifetime when Don and his manager, Tony Opodisano, who also managed Frank Sinatra, invited me backstage in Vegas to interview Don back in 2016. It was his last radio interview before he left us in early 2017. And as we celebrate Don's birthday, here is my conversation with the legendary Don Rickles.
His mother and father are sitting on the porch in Nebraska going, "Why doesn't Johnny call?" And his father is not that way. Your dad is what, about 6'2"?
No.
Your father, try to think.
Yes.
See, when you get that rich, you forget the family. He's so busy in court all day long going, "Well, who wants to sue?" You got a lovely wife now, Joanna, who I saw.
I'm still trying to get the hassock from the last marriage. Look.
Now, John, you've had, not lucky in love, but now, thank God, you've met the woman of
yes.
your dreams. Really.
Well.
And, hey, folks, we don't know. He just calls Ed and I and says, "I met the woman of my dreams." And for his success, we go, "Fine, John." Ned, you've had, never lucky in love, but you're both handsome guys. I'm married 9 years. I want to be with you guys so bad.
But you didn't
get
married.
I got a Jewish
you
wife
didn't...
that just lays in bed and goes, "Help me with the jewelry." Now, don't write letters. You taught me that. Don't write letters. Those of you in the Jewish world, if you are a Jew, I am proud. They always say we're rich. That's baloney. We're human beings, all of us. And I wish peace, shalom, to all of us.
Now, you didn't get married, though, until you were... late in life.
Well, till I was what?
Well, I mean...
I was 38 years old before
I got married. Now, that's kind of long, isn't it?
Hey, we discussed this before, and Ed, you guys got married, your first marriages, and I'm not being sarcastic.
38?
Well, I got news. When you're kids, you come out of college. I never went to college. I come up the hard way. You guys just skyrocketed. But I came out of the neighborhood, and they went, "What a minute, abroad?" And the broad was always like me, But actually, what happened was I met the most darling lady in life late night because I worked with strippers, exotic dancers, as we call them today. With the cobra coming out of the basket. And the cobra went, "I want to be with you." And the broad went, "Challenge me, challenge me." It's a long story. I was on the road a lot. Laying in bed watching a moth die on the lamb, And when you get like that, you find yourself on a street corner going, "Miss..." And then I met my wife, who said, "I'm not some perverted jerk, I'm a person." And now she's sitting at home, just laying there, going, "He's so rich, he's so rich." And my kid's skipping through the house going, "Make more gold, mommy, make more gold." See, they always say Jewish people have a lot of money. You're an Irish guy, right?
That's right.
Well, you never would have money because you're too busy spending it on beer. You just sit around the house in your bathroom going...
Backstage in Las Vegas at the Orleans Hotel and Casino with a comedy legend that has entertained us for nearly 65 years. He's an actor, a comedian, an author, an Emmy Award winner. Don has performed for 4 U.S. presidents, traveled the world with his lovely wife Barbara and his best friends Bob and Ginny Newhart. I thought I'd drop his name in there.
Sure. No, he'll check that out.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure he will. And that is the legendary Don Rickles. Don, good evening and happy 90th birthday to you.
I always say me and Harry Truman, May 8th.
May 8th, that's the day. And I wanted to talk about your very beginnings. The very beginnings that developed into the Don Rickles we know today. You were the class clown, not great in school. You were the president of your high school class. Where did you get your sense of humor?
Well, I really don't know. My mother was not a person that did humor. She had great personality. My father was a terrific salesman, but not a jokester, so to speak. It just came, from being around guys. I was always even in the Navy, and that's further on in my life. But when I was a very young guy, I always kidded around in school, and it became me. I really don't have a basis to say, my Uncle Charlie or something. But it's not so. I just my mother encouraged it, to kid around. Not dreaming I would be doing
sure.
this.
Friends, family members,
yeah,
that
right.
type of thing.
Get up at the party, at the bar mitzvah, at the wedding, and say something.
Now, you left the Navy at the end of the war, and thank you for your service, by the way. You went to school at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, class of 48, with the likes of Grace Kelly, Jason Robards, Anne Bancroft, Charles Durning. Very prestigious school.
It was, and I was very fortunate because they said I'd never attain that because I was always kind of loud and strong. And it was a guy called Phil Loeb, rest his soul. Look how I remember his name now. He's a great director, and he passed away. And and I used to go, good evening, you know, from the stage and all. And he said, take it easy, take it. He said, but never lose that energy. And that energy was the basis of my humor, and that helped me a great deal.
An attitude.
Yeah. Well, see, my whole humor is based on not so much the joke, really, but, of course, it's the attitude of what I say.
You're not a joke teller. I mean, you know, I've heard you say, give me $1 million and go on stage, you know, you're a comedian, but you're not a joke teller. You did some impressions for a while.
Yes, I did.
In the early days.
Oh, God, yes.
But talking to the audience is really what made you who you were.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And everything I've done to this very day, except for television, everything I've done on the stage is what I created in the car, in the house, the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's never been written on paper.
Right.
And I just added and added and kept saying it. It became a performance.
Sure. And there was no Comedy Central. There was no Comedy Store, no Tonight Show when you got started. Comedians worked other venues. You worked burlesque houses and in strip clubs.
Yeah. I worked at what they call strip joints with the girls, Satina, taking off her clothes. And those days, there was not that much clothes taken off. And I was like the comedian in between, you know, with the talking. Again, talking to the audience and making stupid jokes and throwing in a few impressions. And that's how I kept going and joining terrible places, believe me.
And there are places, three names that I've always heard you talk about, and in your book, too. The three places were Slate Brothers, Murray Franklin's, and the Copacabana. The three names are always Johnny Carson, Frank Sinatra, and Dean Martin. And I want to first talk to you a little bit about the Slate Brothers.
Yeah, well, there was a guy called Henry Slate, rest his soul. He was a good guy, and I worked for, like, peanuts, and I used to get dressed, in the kitchen. You know, the fellow called Harry Goomings, rest his soul, who was with me for 40 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And he used to help me get dressed in the kitchen. I always wanted to wear a tuxedo. That was my thing.
Yeah. And a real bow tie.
Yeah. And I worked at and it's like a little store.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I started to do what I do, making fun of people. And suddenly, stars started to show up, little by little, you know. And they said, oh, Sinatra was in the other night, and Rickles did blah, blah, blah. Or Charlton Heston came by, you know. And I used to do stuff about these thin women and so forth. And it caught on, and it was exciting time.
Well, they wanted to be insulted by you. I mean, they caught on that was cool.
And you know, they used the word insult, and it's an attitude. It's not mean spirited. I've never, in my opinion, never hurt anybody. You know, I never hit below the belt or anything. Even when it came to a mobsters who have come to see me in those days.
Sure.
And so I made jokes about them, but they laughed because it was kind and it was funny.
And you make
Mickey Cohn, he used to rest. So he used to come in and sit. I don't think Tony ever knew this. And he used to sit in the front with his dog. He had a dog, and he put the dog in the chair and sit there and laugh his hands on. And I would kid about the dog and so forth.
Of course you would.
That's what he did. He thought it was a riot.
That's great. And I know Murray Franklin's came along and your mother, your dear mother, God rest her soul, played a big part in getting Frank to come see you at Murray Franklin's.
Yeah, well, she went up to Dolly, up at the Fontainebleau, and I say in the performance. And Spoltrin said, if you get Frank to see my Donnie, she'll call me Donnie. And she said, don't Etta, it was her name. Don't worry, Etta, I'll take care of her. And sure enough, a couple of nights later, Frank came in with a few of his friends, and that was it, you know.
And Murray Franklin's was in Miami.
Yeah, it was. And when I say it on the stage, I think I'm kidding. It was a rocking chair. That was the theme, all rocking chairs. And to this day, well, Murray's in another world now, but in those days he said, look at the crowd I'm drawing, meaning him. And I always went along with that.
He kind of felt like he was the Ed Sullivan, really, of Miami, didn't he?
Yeah. It was a big shot. Yeah.
But this is where, you know, Frank Sinatra, nobody messed with Frank Sinatra.
It's all over, Frank. I know you don't like to hear that. It's gone.
They said, Frank Sinatra's here, and I've never met him, you know.
Never mind.
And I get the chills.
You'll excuse us, won't you?
Certainly, certainly. Marco Mangananzo was hurt.
Ooh. Marco Mangananzo?
Fambino Bombazzo. Two bullets in the head Thursday. Now this you don't believe. Excuse us, Johnny, you're from the Midwest, you're busy going, is the truck loaded? Guido says hi. He hasn't had a chance to talk to you. And from Jersey City, your good friend, Bubani Umbatsa.
What's his
alias? He started his car. He started his car with your album on, and now he's a highway.
Where'd you get away with that?
Well, he enjoyed me. I mean, we could have been having dinner, as I always say, and he'd be safe. And you know, when I was in Europe, when I say, pass the rolls, and he'd say, pass the rolls, then he'd say, you know, and I said, Frank, I'm talking. And he'd start to laugh as his can off. He'd fall on the floor. When I talk, I said, pass the rolls, I don't care about Europe. And he'd loved it.
I'm a nice guy, in spite of what you heard.
TV producers at the time thought you were too hot to handle, but on the night of October 7th, 1965, you made your first appearance on The Tonight Show, over 100 appearances, as we were saying, over three decades. How did you first meet Johnny? How did that all come about?
Well, it was in New York. I don't exactly know how we met, but he heard about me in the Elegant. That was the place my manager owned, and I was very successful there, and people used to come and see. So, you know, word got around, and then his people asked if I'd come on the show. And we hit it off great. And from the very day we met, if the paper said, that's the time when, if the paper said, we're going to talk about trains tonight, and he'd look at the paper and said, how's your mother, you know? And I'd say, you never liked my mother. Why did you bring that up? And we'd start to do 20 minutes about mothers, you know?
Yeah.
And your mother never liked me. Why is that? You know? And he was great. He picked right up on it. And it always had fun.
And he was the kind of guy that made you funny. He was a great setup artist, and he wanted you to shine.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Johnny was pretty much, socially, was kind of a loner, you know?
Yeah,
We went out socially occasionally, but he wasn't a guy that participated. He was uncomfortable with a lot of people, and yet when the light went on, he was the best.
What's the worst place you ever worked? I mean, when you were just starting. Every time you travel with your wife, you always seem to travel with Bob and Ginny Newhart. Is there a reason for that?
Well, yeah, because he pays for everything.
No, he doesn't.
No, not really. No, I travel with Newhart because Bob and I have nothing in common. Bob, to me, is, you know, like, it's like being in a room with a dead fly.
Don't worry, Ed. You're going to be big.
This, hey, eventually, if Johnny retires, are you going to retire?
Certainly.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I know what your wife spends. You are not retiring. He's got a wife that just sits up in Bel Air. She was an airline hostess, had nothing. Now she goes, send in another box.
Now, I know. And who opens for who?
Well, naturally, Frank opens for me.
I see.
I told that joke to Frank. And ever since then, I can't find my aunt in the Bronx. But,
and the Bronx, eh?
In the Bronx.
Same with David Letterman, and I know it was.
Yeah, Letterman had that thing too.
Yeah, did you in the earlier days of knowing Johnny? Did you hang out with him more? Really, in the '60s, a little bit more.
No, it was never hanging out with Johnny. It was a dinner date, or doing the show and have dinner with him afterwards.
Okay.
Or when his birthday came, we were at the house and a few people, but he was very, very, very closed with his life.
Yeah. Do you have a? Not so much a popular moment, but do you have a favorite moment out of, you know, 100 plus appearances on the show that you love talking about an experience you had on the air with Johnny? Like, what was your favorite?
Well, I can't see. There were so many wonderful times.
Yeah.
There was a time when he threw me into the pool. That was talked about a great deal.
Yeah.
And there was one other time when I...
Well, with Sinatra, you know, when Frank was on the show, and he didn't make a lot of appearances on The Tonight Show, but then you walked out on stage. You came.
Yeah, that was another thing. It's on the film, in the show here tonight.
One of my favorite moments of all time. Share with us that story that Frank told about you. You weren't married to Barbara yet. You were dating a pretty girl, and you walked over to Frank's table.
It's funny you should say that, because the wife said to me upstairs, Don, stop telling that story.
Did she really?
I swear
it's
to
the
God.
Best story. story.
Everybody in the
story world,
the newspaper people, everybody picked up on that story. One guy said it happened in Shanghai. One guy said it happened in China. One guy said it happened in North Korea. I mean, from a little story like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true. The punchline is, you know, it's with this girl, blah, blah, blah. I went to the school with her, and he was in the coat in the sands in the lounge. I went over and said, call me Bullethead. I said, Frank, he said, what is Bullethead? I said, if you could come over and help me out with the girl, blah, 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 blah. Okay, not right away. But I said, don't worry, I'll, okay. And so I sat down with her, and she said, do you know Frank Sinatra? I said, oh, sweetheart, come on. But sure enough, and she was getting all supports there. He came over and said, hey, Don, how are you? And I said, hey, Frank, can't you see I'm eating? and like you, he fell off.
Yeah.
Fell out living. Then he had the security cops, which nobody even knew, picked me up and carried me out.
There was another story, and I've only heard you tell it once, and I don't even remember what show it was on. And I was a kid when I heard the story, and you were talking about being with Jilly Rizzo. And after a performance, you guys were sitting down having some vodka, some Jack Daniels, whatever it was at the time. And there was thunder outside and lightning. Yeah. Share with us that story.
Yeah, well, it was in Italy. We were sitting in a hotel and at the big bay window. You know, boom, 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 boom. Lights were going, thunder and rain. And frankly, we were all having vodka, just the three of us. And he kept saying that. Tell those reporters to stop. and it was raining. I said, well, Frank, it's no. Don't check me around. I want you to go out, you and Jillian. Tell them to stop it. I want to stop. Because the lightning was coming into it. And we had tuxedos on.
Yeah.
We went out soaking wet in the rain. Now you people, stop it. Just stop it.
What would you like me to tell the next generation and more of these young kids about Don Rickles?
That was a guy that was interested in making the people laugh. The people and to do things they understood and to do things that are happening in their life and project it and exaggerate it. That's it.
I'll trade you laughter for love. I'll trade you one for the other. Laughter for love. What can you lose? Some madness, murder.
The legendary Don Rickles.